This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas, powered by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, I'm Philip C. and welcome to The Breakfast Grill. On today's Breakfast Grill, I'm in conversation with Dylan C. Fernando, the CEO of Dilma Tea, one of the leading tea companies in the world, from Sri Lanka. A very good morning to you, sir. How are you keeping?
Good morning. I'm brilliant. All the better for being here. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being in the studio. But I just want to ask you straight away about the crisis happening in Sri Lanka, because many say really that Dilma represents the best of Sri Lanka, a global brand, a family business that tries to transcend generations, world-class tea plantations, social entrepreneurship embedded across the business, leadership in sustainability. So do you think the crisis that the country is engulfed in right now represents the worst of Sri Lanka?
It does, but it also represents the future of Sri Lanka, because we have a legacy that is unfortunate since independence, populist policies that have brought us to a point where you have insolvency, essentially. Mm. But the people have drawn a line in the sand and essentially expressed very clearly to our future leaders that there is no tolerance of either incompetence.
Enough is enough.
Absolutely. Neither corruption, neither incompetence or poor management. But the people are suffering. But here is a point from which we can only grow.
So as you say, right, a line is being drawn now. We've seen the PM resign, also news that he's actually flown off to Singapore. We're beginning to see the reopening of few lines. Is this the light at the end of the tunnel?
It is, because now, with greater credibility, with a people's government, not a government that is thrust upon the people and which clearly there was simmering discontent, you have a situation where we can begin to rebuild, knowing that we have leaders who actually empathize, understand the situation, and leaders who are on watch, because the watch is not going to change. They will be monitored. And I think that's the line that has been drawn, which is very important for our future.
A key accountability that I think you demand, I think corporate leaders all around Sri Lanka demand, but a key accountability you have is also your profit and loss. I mean, 2021-2020 financials look relatively healthy, 20% PAT margin, 30% return on equity, 13% return on capital employed. I have to say 2020 is going to look very different, right?
Actually, not, because globally, you have tea is a product that is not affected significantly by recession. It's an affordable luxury. Mm. And for us, we have a very strong philosophy. My father set out to have a business that would serve humanity with kindness to people and nature. And this is something we take very seriously, because if you focus on doing things right, the profits will follow. So for us, it's not about commoditization. It's not about making profits in market, but it's about offering a quality product, offering a product that also has sustainability embedded. So we're involved in climate change, we're involved in agroforestry, we are involved in gender issues in Sri Lanka, our childcare centers for children with Down syndrome, with cerebral palsy. I mean, we've got 1,000 different.
Yeah, you have so many actions and initiatives across the board. I mean, there's such a big intent to make a difference in wherever you operate in your society and communities. But from a financial standpoint, what does 2022 look like? Are you going to see better revenues? Is the margins going to be held at 20%?
The biggest challenge would probably be global logistics. Mm. So really not a lot to do with Sri Lanka. Yes, we have devaluation, but we are a dollar-denominated business. So that, I guess, is a blessing in a sense. But we also have a huge social overhead. We need to be able to support, I think, something like 10,000 families every month, because those are the workers at on our tea gardens and so on. And they need food aid, they need emergency assistance, medical medicines, etc. So yes, costs have gone up. And quite honestly, it is for a time such as this that businesses build up reserves, and yep, we have done well. And I would say that purely, if you look at the sequence of events, we have a perfect storm. We had the Easter bombings, we had the pandemic, and the role of business, not only for us, but role of every business has changed fundamentally. So today, the option of CSR is not one that you can take lightly. And in fact, it should not even be CSR. There is an irrevocable obligation to do good, not only for your workers, but also for the wider community. Because today, when you see a fuel line, what do? Do you look the other way? No, you have to get involved. So whether you're a business or whether you're a social enterprise or government or an individual, everybody is getting involved in Sri Lanka, and that's the spirit that we are seeing.
And they will all that is all well and good, but there will be some short-term costs, right? Short-term investments to sort this all out in the short term, right?
There will be massive investments. I mean, at this point, we are called upon to fund medicines for government hospitals, to fund training, to entrepreneurship development. All these are new costs, but the fact is that there is an obligation. I mean, you can't have a business that operates in isolation that says that, look, problems have affected the people, but we're okay. No, that is absolutely not. As a business, we're doing okay. The tea industry is doing okay because it has to do okay. The country needs foreign exchange. So that obligation is upon us, but also to serve the community.
So a key part of your business, as you said just now, the big challenge you have is logistics. As you say, right, inventory days up 40% from 57 days to 81 days in 2021. That's even before the fuel crisis that you're going through now. It must be super hard for you to get tea to the ports.
It's not too difficult because we are able to, as a dollar business, we're able to access the fuel we need. But what is challenging more than getting fuel to the ports is getting fuel from our port internationally, because costs have gone up ridiculously. And unfortunately, it's an unsustainable increase. We are seeing price gouging from a lot of international shipping companies. Unreasonable.
How ridiculous is it?
It's three times increased, you know, at the point. And of course, you can see that reflected in their balance sheets, and which really I think is quite unethical, because at the bottom line, there are the producers who are really struggling. And I have seen producers put out of business completely. I mean, in the coconut industry, less so in tea, but in other industries.
But you have no choice, isn't it? Because these are people that are holding you by the neck.
A necessary evil, unfortunately.
So then with this issue about rising costs, margins under pressure, are creditors and suppliers demanding stricter payment schedules? Because payables did go up by 30%, 33% from 24 days to 32 days, right? How are you managing the tight creditors that are coming through now?
Well, fortunately, we have been managed conservatively. That was an important principle of my father. So we don't have an issue in that regard. We've always, we haven't leveraged the business to the extent that it's fashionable to do today. So it's not a huge issue. The increase in costs, yes, that's something we really struggle with. But as for the future, I believe that this situation will correct itself. Yes, the shipping companies are making, hundreds of billions of dollars. But once that changes, you're going to see a fundamental and huge impact, not only on food inflation, but also on the viability of entrepreneurs like us.
I mean, with rising costs, is it easy to pass the cost on to the consumer? Since, as you say, right, tea is a certain amount of commodity. There's been a volatility in the price, but you have put a lot of effort to rebrand and upsize the product. Can you pass the cost over to the consumer?
For us, it's particularly difficult because for a lot of manufacturers, you can simply diversify your sources. You can say, okay, look, let me buy a cheaper tea or whatever. But for us, my father made a very clear commitment. It has to be the finest pure Ceylon tea. So we have to wear the cost. And no, it's not possible to pass it on. You can put in 4% out of 15%, but you simply have to be more innovative, more creative, come up with new formats. We are coming up with, for example, iced tea. We're launching an iced tea today here in Malaysia. We've taken it around the world. We are taking elixir of Ceylon tea for cocktails, mocktails, etc. So innovation, that's what's going to drive the change.
And early on, you were saying that, you know, for your business, it's very much a dollar-denominated business. I want to come back to the point that the Sri Lankan rupee really is on a free fall. You talk about 180 to 200 rupees to the dollar in early 2021. Now you're close to 360 rupees. There is no impact whatsoever to the business. Does it really affect your ability to invest in the business then?
It does, because we've got our reserves built up, of course, in rupees that were denominated at 185 and so on. But it's a challenging time, and we have to look at everything differently. And that's what we're doing. We're trying not to focus on the negatives, trying to focus on what can be, and looking to the fact that yes, we can translate this devaluation into a positive by trying to focus more on higher value-added products and so on. And that's why I'm here.
How do you prioritize investments then going forward? When you look at the situation you're in, it's a relatively tight, volatile situation. Where are the investments going to be prioritized in the next 3 to 5 years then for yourself?
Well, infrastructure has to be improved. So if you look at machinery, we have to go with the state of the art. We've just completed an investment of, I think, almost $15 million in a new factory, new facility, end of line, etc. Because quality control, you can never compromise. So no matter what, for the viability of our business, and we have to look beyond the present, you have to look to the future. If you focus too much on the present, I guess you would say, look, we're not going to do anything. We're just going to be like a deer in the headlights. No, absolutely not. We are looking beyond and we are preparing to come out stronger, because if you don't, then you're going to come out a lot weaker.
So how do you look at the portfolio? What are the things that are interesting in the next 5 years? What kind of investments are very interesting for you then?
Well, you know, where tea is concerned, the sensitivity to health, wellness, to natural products, and tea at its core is natural. It's influenced by terroir. It's handpicked. It's the process, not artificially processed leaf. It's natural in a very, very sincere way. And so for us, it's going more into the heart of our business, investing in better extraction technologies to try to have a better iced tea, to have a better tea for mixology, better chais, and so on. So that's where we are investing. I mean, of course, there's the rest of it. But if you look at the global financial markets, you know, it's anybody's guess. But no, for us, it's a focus on the core of our business and the people in our business.
On The Breakfast Grill, I'm in conversation with Dylan C. Fernando, the CEO of Dilma Tea. After the break, his move towards sustainability. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back on The Breakfast Grill. I'm in conversation with Dylan C. Fernando, the CEO of Dilma Tea, as we understand how they're navigating the current political and economic crisis in Sri Lanka. You know, sir, let's just go straight to your product portfolio. 3,000 products, over 100 markets and 848 supply chain partners. Do you think this calls for prioritization and focus?
It does. But, you know, tea consumption or tea preferences, they are so varied. You have here in Malaysia, you love your teh tarik, you love your milky sweet tea. But imagine in Japan, we have somebody, you know, typical consumer would want a light, bright Norelia tea. You go to the Middle East, you Saudi Arabia, they want a thick, strong tea. You know, so preferences are varied. And for us as a family business, we don't want to make a generic offering. We want to try to be as personal as possible with our customers. So yes, it's a crazy situation.
It is hard. It's hard to prioritize because, you know, I remember your story. You started exporting tea in Russia first and then Australia. These palettes are so different, right? How do you understand differing consumer palettes?
I think it's the simple way. My father taught me, go to the market, meet customers, talk to them, understand what they do. You know, you can sit behind a computer and you can look at your research, but you're never going to get as good research as talking to you and finding out how do you like your tea.
Yes, that's very true. And I think the biggest issue here is when you look at the whole global space, where are the white spaces for you that you have not yet pursued? Where are the markets or even the products that you feel perhaps I should do much more in?
Well, it's the US. The US is a difficult market to get into because there's been so much commoditization of tea. So for a business that maintains a standard and cannot compromise on quality, it's a challenge. You've got tea that is selling as, well, they call it belly wash because it's so cheap. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that Gen Zers and millennials are changing that discussion. So earlier, okay, after the 2008 financial crisis, there was EDLP, discount culture, but they're drawing a line, like our protesters drawing a line and saying, hey, look, you know, we want tea that is good for us, that is healthy, that has authenticity. And that is where we really excel. My father refused to compromise on any of these things. And now I can see the wisdom. I must say, I argued with him occasionally and said, come on, you know, we're not doing anything here. Nothing in certain territories. But that's changing and that's fantastic. And it's driven by younger, new tea drinkers who are saying, look, tell us a story. You know, what are you guys doing? What are you doing for your staff? What are you doing for the environment? Why is this tea tasting light? Why is this woody and robust? And why is this earthy and malty and so on?
Do you think the next generation is just interested in the behind-the-scenes story? Or are they more interested in the complexity of tea? Because tea is super complex, right? What are they more intrigued by? That the product has got it's so versatile, or that the story you sell at Dilma is so interesting and relevant to them?
I think for the next generation, it's not any one factor, but it's a multitude. So you have to tick the boxes across authenticity, across ethics and sustainability. You've got to tick the boxes on taste, So for us, our business essentially is, you can summarize it as a commitment to taste, to natural goodness and ethical purpose. And I think those are really the core of what we're seeing. Now, this 10 years ago, we would get kicked out of many retail meetings and so on and say, look, you guys are too expensive, you know, change your model. I've had, even 2 weeks ago, I had a buyer and I said, look, you know, this is it. We can't change. This is what we do. I said, no, you know, go and buy cheaper tea and give me something, but give me my 50% off. And we said, look, I'm sorry, we're out. But
you had to walk away.
We have to walk away. In many situations, you have to. But if you begin to compromise, then you lose your identity. And quite apart from your own self, your own dignity, the younger generations are very perceptive. If they see you in some corner of the world doing silly things, they're going to know very quickly.
Yeah, they can smell a rat anywhere.
Absolutely.
You know, but you talk about perceptive. I think the classic person in your life that's been very perceptive is your father, Merrill J. Fernando.
And no doubt about
it. And I just was so intrigued that perhaps he was one of the first corporate celebrities we had. I've never ever seen someone in the 1970s be willing to put their name to the brand and go out and be advertising. This is even pre-Steve Jobs. Why did he have that foresight that he had to put himself out to promote the brand?
Well, it was very simple. There were two reasons. I mean, the first thing is that in 1950, when he saw what was happening in the tea industry, and at that time we produced beautiful tea as we do now, but the tea was being taken to London, it was being blended, and even up until the 1980s, most of our tea was taken to London for a London auction. So clearly, this was a colonial economic system that was persisting post-colonization, or post-independence rather. So he saw that for the country to develop, for the industry to develop, for sustainability, to help the workers and so on, we needed a fairer share of our income, of our revenue from the product. And so you had to start a Sri Lankan brand. So that was his critical motivation to be an
ambassador.
But also to be able to you know, his purpose was strong. So he committed himself. It was not about making money. It was about doing something for a country and doing something for the 2 million people who depend on tea for their livelihood. So it was much stronger than simply saying, look, let me start a business that'll make me more money. And, you know, we are blessed to be a part of that, because that philosophy is what drives the business today. It's what encourages our team.
You don't shy away from the identity of being Sri Lankan, right? Even though with all these things happening, you still feel very invested in the country that you're in, simply because of all the plantations and the assets you have here.
The plantations, the people, that was my father's philosophy. And yes, I mean, we have to weather a few storms. We had a conflict that went on until the, you know, 2008-09. We have the present situation, but we have to continue to champion the best of Sri Lanka.
Mm-hmm. And your father named Dilhan after you and your brother.
Dilhan and Malik.
Yes. Sorry, I'm very sorry about that. And Malik actually runs the hotel business.
He does.
Yes,
he does.
And I have gone to the website. Beautiful hotels all across the around Sri Lanka, probably ravaged by the pandemic, also not helped now by the crisis, right? How are the hotels doing? What's the positioning for these hotels? Because they are super luxury.
They are. They're all Raleigh and Chateau properties. They are super luxury. They're very quiet at the moment, but lots of Sri Lankans have patronized the properties, helping us. And also we're getting quite a few tourists beginning to come in and who are now emboldened by the fact that there has been change. And of course, now we have certain developments today. And we're hoping that happens. But I didn't finish answering your earlier question, why my father chose to champion the brand. Well, you know, he told me, or he tells anyone who asks, he simply couldn't afford a celebrity. He couldn't afford an agency to do his brand name. So he put the names of his two sons together. And, you know, that it's really as simple as that.
I see. And I think he's inducted also your children as well in future brand videos, from what I've seen as well.
Absolutely. My son has joined. I hope my brother's daughter will join, but many more in the wings.
So what's the portfolio like? I mean, when you look at it, you started off with tea. You've also gone into hotels. There's even some entry into herbs, even condiments, right? What's the portfolio for Dilmah in 5-10 years' time?
Dilmah is a business that started with a natural herbal beverage in tea, which has expanded into spices, so cinnamon, etc., but all within that same area of Sri Lankan artisanal produce. But hotels began actually with tea tourism, with Ceylon tea trails, then it extended because we had to create a certain network or a trail around Sri Lanka. And for the future, it will continue to be that, because Sri Lanka has some incredible natural herbs and spices, cinnamon, particularly Ceylon cinnamon, which its unique identity. And I think that's where we see it going. Of course, there'll be a little play into solar energy, into renewables and so on, but that's part of our ethical philosophy.
But going forward, do you see yourself getting into retail? Because many of your competitors have tried to go retail. Would retail be an option for you to expand the tea business?
Well, we have our tea lounges.
Yes.
We have Brew 1867, which serves, so it's in different parts of the world. But it's a completely different area of business. It's not our forte. We are tea people, so we need to stick to what we know. Yeah, we will have more and more lounges. We will have mobile concepts that will present tea in different forms. There's an incredible amount of potential in tea, but it's not in the typical hot cup. You know, you raise your pinky and you this is great, yes. But it's traditional. But it's also the iced tea, the sparkling teas, the tea sodas, tea tonics. This is the kind of stuff that we're working on because that's where consumers are taking us. Healthy, natural, and authentic. And I think those are the three words that would characterize the directions we are going in, whether it's tea, spices, or tea tourism.
And presumably the pandemic has taught many valuable lessons in how you engage the consumer and customer. Perhaps you were not affected so much, but I did see a big play to e-commerce. What's the strategy going forward to get e-commerce to play a larger part of the distribution so that you don't rely on the middlemen or retailers?
Well, I think that's a no-brainer. I mean, of course, e-commerce still constitutes a very small part of our business, I think really not even 2%. But the fact is that the writing is on the wall, and I would say in 5 years' time, it would probably be more like 25%. And the fact is that it also works well with consumer expectations. They want authenticity, so there's nothing more authentic than being able to buy direct from the plantation. So something like within 15 days, the tea that is picked, perfected, and packed at source is directly with you. This kind of thing works. And the fact is that tea is an affordable luxury. Even the finest teas, you're talking about $4 or $5 for a cup, an equivalent in a cup, I'm talking about per bag. So it's not a huge investment. You know, even the finest loose leaf teas, that's the kind of spend what you would typically spend for a coffee in a cafe.
And so, you know, when you talk about this being an affordable luxury, I presume like the staples we understand versus perhaps the more premium selections you have, right? They will drive much higher margins, the premium selections. Like how much more margins are you seeing for the more premium kind of positioned teas?
Well, you see, typically, you would see for the fine teas, you would see 30-40% margins. But the fact is that relative to the global market, that is, and if you look at the global beverage market, for the consumer, that's really not a lot in terms of the fact that a cup of fine tea might set you back, $15 or maybe $20 for a pot. Relative to other beverages that have similar proposition, it's really not a lot. This is why I call it an affordable luxury.
On this special extended breakfast grill, I'm in discussion with Dylan C. Fernando, the CEO of Dilma Tea, after the 8:30 news bulletin, building a business that transcends generations. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome to this special extended breakfast grill with Dilhan C. Fernando, the CEO of Dilma Tea, as he helps us chart how Dilma Tea is navigating from the pandemic to one another crisis in Sri Lanka. You know, Dilhan, you have earlier said in the conversation that the conflict in Sri Lanka seems justified, that it was a necessary pain for us to basically clear the line, draw the line in the sand and move forward.
Absolutely. We had a combination of a regime that didn't understand the aspirations of the people, nor the circumstances, the economic and the social circumstances, plus a very challenging situation. We had since 2019 a perfect storm of the Easter bombings, the pandemic. So tourism, our key foreign exchange revenue generators were all affected. And so, yeah, something had to be done, but they weren't doing anything. So at certain point, the people decided they had to take a stand.
Enough was enough. And I think there were also many missteps in policies, one being that switch to organic fertilizer, right?
That was tragic. Yes.
That was tragic, right? There was intended a 20 to 30% increase in price. Clearly didn't happen with the reduction in yield, 20% reduction as you shifted to organic. That was devastating for the business?
It could never have happened. And in fact, this is something that we explained to the task force at the time, but were ignored simply because the size of the market is such and the ability of consumers to absorb an increase, organic is great. People talk about organic a lot. But the fact is, if you then go and say, okay, look, Ceylon tea across the board is going to be 20% more expensive from tomorrow, that doesn't work because that isn't the size of the market. The market is, what, 5% or less? And you have so many examples of failed organic transitions. And at the same time, Switzerland took a vote and they quite intelligently decided that this was not a sustainable thing. So we took the plunge. It was the wrong decision and we had to unfortunately face the consequences.
Yeah, you have to pay the consequences. But I guess the challenge is that this transition to organic, this intention to move to organic was intended as part of a broader sustainability push, wasn't it? Does this kind of show that sustainability isn't really sustainable in the short term?
Well, you know, sustainability is critical. It is essential and there's no negotiation there. But the fact is that sustainability doesn't mean organic. It also means, it means prudent use of the right inputs. It means that you do not subsidize agrochemicals. You price them so that there is prudent use. It means that you use your state, the research and other infrastructure. I mean, whether you go to Japan, for they have such pure teas there, the Sencha and so on, and they do use glyphosate because there are certain agrochemicals that are tested and found acceptable. So within what you would consider to be safe, there is a requirement, because if you go completely organic and you increase your cost with reduced yields, you end up with a situation where the product isn't sustainable. Yes, you can do it for 5%, and we do it. We use agroforestry, we use do have organic and so on, but that would constitute less than 5% of our total business, simply because there isn't a market. So you would immediately put millions of tea plantation workers into poverty, yeah. And that's pretty much what happened.
So I think that's one policy which was flawed. But I think going forward, as you see the dust hopefully settle over in Sri Lanka, I think the reality is that the Sri Lankan government really needs to shore its public finances. And there will be a lot of pressure on corporates, companies like yourselves, to, I think, shoulder more responsibility there. Are you ready for more taxes?
Absolutely. I think there was a foolish move to reduce corporate tax. But the fact is that every business and our relationship with the community has changed. We have to shoulder the cost, because beyond this cost is an opportunity. And if we don't take that opportunity, Sri Lanka is going to have a very difficult time. We've had a situation where this regime that has just been ousted invested in showpiece projects that we have airports that don't have flights. We have ports that don't have ships. It's a crazy situation. But with this demonstration that the youth of Sri Lanka have made, they've taught us all a valuable lesson that we will not tolerate, or they will not tolerate. And now we're all together in this.
But this will be painful for you, isn't it? More taxes. It will stop your ability to make necessary investments into your business and into the country as well.
Every problem has a solution, I believe. And yes, the taxes are necessary because there is a social overhead. We are part of a community and the community is suffering if we don't participate in that. And the fact is that as a business, we really have an unique ability to say, look, how are we going to deal with this problem? What is the solution? And the solution is diversification, it's innovation, it's looking at food production. I mean, we are doing things that we never dreamed of. In the last 6 months, we've been adapting to growing cassava, to doing cassava flour, to looking at new products. I mean, we were talking about polytunnels a moment ago, and we've been looking at intensive agriculture. We've been looking at hydroponics, experimenting with solar and renewable energies. We need to, as businesses, use the network and the resources we have to be able to address the needs of the people. I mean, solar tuk-tuk is something that we are exploring at the moment. And these are critical requirements. It's outside. You know, we're a tea company. We have no place doing this kind of thing. But right now, we have to, because that's what it's going
to
take.
You have to, and I think you can make differences in the areas of sphere of your influence. And that's why you have the Dilma Conservation and the MGF Charitable Foundation. What are the biggest priorities there in terms of making an impact in your community there?
You know, where the foundation is concerned, my father's story is very simple, and we seek to echo that. It is a story of an ordinary Sri Lankan from a lower middle class home who came from a village and who had a great dream, but who persevered with faith, with dedication, and he achieved something. when I go back to my father's home, and I do that annually just to remind myself where he came from, his house is, about the size of this studio. And it was a very lower middle class home. And, from that, he really demonstrates that with faith, with commitment, with dedication, and really with a purpose in mind, a purpose that is greater than profit, you can achieve. And for us, now the foundation is about replicating that, finding families of fishermen, finding the wives of the wives of people whose lives were lost in the conflict. And we have set up communities. We are seeing incredible capability. It takes very little to unlock potential, whether it is a group of war widows, whether it is children with Down syndrome, cerebral palsy. It's just an ability to see what can be rather than focusing on what can't be. And I can tell you, we have recently graduated a wonderful group of ladies, Down syndrome youth, who are now chefs. They're working in chocolate making, pastry, and so on. Just a question of understanding what they can do.
So if I listen to you, and clearly your father is an icon, he energizes you, he really gives you and instills that values to you. What kind of values do you want to instill to your children as in potential next successes for your businesses?
Again, it's very simple. And yes, my father energizes me. Without the influence that his mother had on him, without the influence that my father has on me, neither would our business be successful, nor would we be able to sit here and talk about these wonderful things. But the thing is, for my children, it's very simple. One is, remember that whatever you do, there must be a purpose. It is not about profit. If you focus on your purpose, focus on your core objective, and it should be about quality and integrity more than anything, the profit will come, the commercial aspects will come. But focus on doing what is right. But also the second thing, which is something that which is rarely associated with business, is the fact that humility. And I think humility is something that we all underestimate, because at this point, we need to unlearn a lot of things that we took for granted. You know, there was this image of big corporates being highly successful. No, we are not. There's nothing special about being a corporate. There is an obligation to serve. There is an obligation to understand the challenges of the people, and an obligation to integrate in order to really not to be a parasite, to support and to be synergistic with your community. It's really as simple as that.
And Dylan, as we come to a close, your favorite tagline is "Do try it." If there was one tea product I must try, what must it be?
Well, I would recommend Good Water. Perfect brewing, 3 minutes, don't forget. And good water means put it through a filter so that you take out any of the minerals and so on. But I would recommend our Ceylon breakfast tea, and I'm going to send you some so you can try it.
Thank you. Actually, I had that for breakfast this morning. Well, Dylan, thank you for spending your time with us on The Breakfast Grill.
It's been
Dylan
an honor.
C. Fernando, the CEO of Dilma Tea, as we understand how they have navigated through these very difficult times. I'm Philip C., BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, where unlimited potential begins.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.